Coaching Impact Radio, informative conversation by coaches for coaches with Frankie Dorn and Terry Hayes. We've heard it before, make sure that your clients' needs fit your coaching expertise. Yet, there is even a larger consideration. Is this person even coachable? Many individuals seeking a coach have larger needs best handled by a mental or physical health specialist. Frankie welcomes Coach Jeannie Erickson to the program to help you see the signs and be certain your next client is coachable.
Well, I'm very excited today to talk about client screening and speaking with our guest, Jeannie Erickson. As most coaches know, coaching is very transformational, yet what is often not top of mind is whether there are any issues like emotional distress that might cause the coaching to be ineffective. And as Jeannie is going to share, this scenario has far-reaching impact for the client as well as for the coach. So welcome, Jeannie.
Thank you, Frankie.
Before we kind of get into the nitty-gritty, can we just start with an overview of this issue, including, you know, the findings of some of the research studies that were conducted?
Sure. I was assisting a PhD candidate, Manon Dallud, who co-teaches this class, to work on her dissertation, and she researched what had been discovered about client screening for coaching. And there were several studies, it turns out, that were done in the 2000s. Keyes did a study in 2003 who found that clients who were seeking voluntary life coaching had higher levels of pathology emotionally than those who took coaching at work. And then Green, in 2005, screened 107 potential life coaching clients. 52% had elevated scores on the brief symptom inventory, which is a psychological stress indicator. It's a screening instrument. And Spence used the same BSI in 2007 and screened 84 prospective coaching clients. He found 25% had clinically elevated scores for distress.
Wow.
And then a final person, Grant, in 2007, found that 4.6% of workplace coaching clients who would be referred in-house scored 90 percentile or above on depression measures, and 20% of them scored at 90% or above on anxiety, which
wow.
is pretty scary.
That's significant.
Yeah, and then so Manon did her study in 2012. It was published. She screened 186 voluntary EAP clients who volunteered for coaching and used the same BSI again for consistency, and 23% of the people who referred themselves were over the 90th percentile on distress indicators. So she found 23%, somebody else found 25%, somebody else found 52%, but we think it's about one-fourth of clients who want to be coached may really need to be in therapy or may need to have a different kind of coaching than the traditional, what are your goals, what's your vision, let's go for it.
Yeah. Well, and that's a significant number of the population that could be in front of a coach.
Absolutely.
Yeah.
Yeah. You know, why do people come to coaching? Because, well, in a workplace, they may come because they're mandatory. You know, they're going to get fired if they don't get coached.
Mm-hmm.
Those, I would think that population in particular would have high levels of distress because something is causing them not to be effective or to be abrasive with coworkers.
What
so
I find
has,
is, yeah, go ahead.
It has a lot of implications for mandatory referrals to coaching as well as voluntary.
Mm-hmm. Well, what I find particularly interesting is that these are people who are voluntarily coming to coaching.
Right.
So yeah. They're looking for some help. They just don't know what the best type of help is.
Right. So what out of that, Manon and I started talking over the last couple of years about what are the implications of all this? You know, how can coaches tell who these people are and when is it ethical to do coaching and when should you be referring someone to some other service? Mm-hmm. And if you choose to coach them, what are the kinds of coaching that really help people who are struggling with emotional distress if they want coaching? And so out of that, we developed a theory and a coaching continuum model. And this class introduces that and teaches how to do the screening.
Okay. So I want to go a little bit deeper into the coaching continuum, and then we can talk a little bit later about the coach training program that you and Manon have developed for Impact Coaching Academy, which is called Client Screening for Successful Coaching Engagement. But I really want to go a little bit deeper into the impact of clients that, you know, really may not be coachable because of the distress levels, because of their level of resilience and, you know, a whole bunch of other factors. So let's talk about why coaches really have to be aware of what is going on for the client. What can happen if the coach is not aware that there's an underlying issue of distress?
I think there's two really negative things that could happen. One is that the coaching could fail and the client does not succeed to reach their goals. They don't really understand why. The coach doesn't really understand why, because the coach did their best work, but mm-hmm. the client didn't respond. They're stuck.
Right.
You know, sometimes coaches who are experienced talk about, yeah, they set these assignments for themselves and then they didn't do any of them.
Mm-hmm.
And that's a problem probably with being distracted by stress or something that needs a different kind of coaching. The other thing that can happen besides the client failing, and which affects the reputation of the coach, of course, is that you can get your client can complain about you to the ethical bodies in coaching, one of which is the International Coach Federation that I'm involved in. And I was the head of the ethics committee for 2 years, and I was on that committee for 6 years. And so I saw complaints that came across against coaches. And in looking at those complaints with a seasoned eye, and I also have a background in mental health, it was pretty clear to me that some of those people probably were very poor candidates for coaching to start with, and expected something that wasn't deliverable. So those coaches were sort of blindly blundering along, trying to figure out what to do with this difficult person who
right.
wasn't responding.
Mm-hmm.
So I think it can affect us as a coach. It can discourage us, and it can confuse us, and it can also jeopardize our reputation.
And, you know, overall, it's very demoralizing for both the client and the coach. I mean, if you have a client who's not going to be aware that they weren't ready for coaching and feels that there was an ethical boundary that maybe, you know, was surpassed, they may just, you know, say, well, I can't be helped. And since they're coming mostly to coaching on a voluntary basis, what's next for them? You know, if a coach can't help them, what's next? It's like there's no hope.
Wouldn't that be sad for a person to
extremely.
Conclude that? Yeah, it is demoralizing.
I mean, you know that there are so many statistics out there about people who are highly stressed, who are suicidal as a result of that. I mean, you can just see the downward trajectory of that type of relationship. And
sure.
it's really... You know, what you're saying is that's completely avoidable.
Yes, and especially if you're doing workplace coaching, which I do, and someone is referred to you, if that person is in a high level of emotional distress and their, quote, success in coaching determines whether they have a job, that
mm.
person may lose their job as part of that downward spiral.
Yeah.
Because you don't recognize... In our ignorance as coaches, we don't recognize what kind of coaching they need and whether they're even coachable at that moment.
That's right.
You know, if they have a severe depression, they're not going to have the energy to respond to coaching. So this class is about identifying where people are on the continuum.
Yeah. There's a couple of questions that I have coming out of what you said. You know, one certainly is about what can happen to the client, you know, who's not getting the type of coaching they need or being referred out to the type of help that they need. But also for the coach who has maybe the sense of failure that they couldn't help this client or, you know, it shifts their perspective. I talk to a lot of coaches who feel very self-conscious about their coaching expertise, and you know they may gain some ground, and then they come across a client who really is not coachable. Who's you know maybe they don't have the skills to coach them, and that can also impact the coach and their feelings of self-worth and their confidence and all of that. You want to talk a little bit about that? Anything
sure.
You want to add?
Yeah. You know, there are many talented people who become coaches. And coaching is not a panacea, obviously. You know, it is a skill, and it is a directed activity to assist people to reach their own goals. But if people are not resilient, and we've determined that resilience is one of the main factors to being coachable, and we can talk about what that is in a minute, but if they don't have resilience, there's almost nothing the coach can do. And I'd hate for coaches to quit the field and give up because they run into some very difficult clients and don't recognize what kind of coaching they need or how to get it started, you know, how to contract. Part of our class is about how to make an ethical coaching agreement so that the client has realistic goals. You know, if you're dealing with someone who is in a high level of distress and highly anxious or highly depressed and they want to change careers, they're not going to get very far. And so the coach gets discouraged and the client gets discouraged. And it's a little naive, I guess, of us sometimes to believe that we can use the same technique for everyone.
Absolutely. And especially with the percentage of people who are really seeking out coaching, I think every coach could expect to encounter clients who are going to be distressed and not coachable. I mean, that's just a given, isn't it?
Yeah, if it's statistically accurate, and these studies were done with people who weren't identified mental health clients or receiving mental health services. They were just regular, ordinary, walking around, working folks who wanted coaching.
Yeah. It's not like people wear a sign around their necks.
Yeah, right. Beware of me. I will harm you. Right.
Yeah. Now, you mentioned a different kind of coaching approach. But before we get into that, how can coaches tell whether their client is in distress at the outset of the coaching conversation, the prospect conversation, the enrollment conversation, so that they can identify, you know, if there are certain techniques that might work with this person. So what are some of those signs?
Well, there are, it's about listening, how you listen to them and what questions you ask. And like any skill, there are some skilled questions and then skilled ways to hear the answers. And part of what this class focuses on is what are those questions and what are you listening for? So we're teaching background information about, you know, what do people say when they're anxious or depressed or have a personality problem or are bipolar or something? How do you tell? And so we, you know, it's not about diagnosis. It's about what are the warning signs that would tell you this person is in distress or not resilient. Because resilience, can I talk about that for a minute?
Yeah, please.
But resilience is about self-efficacy and management, self-management. Resilient people are sort of like those bouncy balls that you, or those punching bags that you hit and they pop back up.
Right.
You ever seen those blow-up things? Resilient people have challenges like everybody else, but they can manage themselves through the challenge.
Mm-hmm.
And so they know how to stay focused. They know how to not get hysterical, you know, not get dramatic. They know how to, they're aware of their own emotions. They want to be a survivor and not a victim. They have the ability to restore calm to themselves after they get upset. They are confident but not arrogant. You know, they're humble but not passive. Does that make sense?
Yes,
so,
absolutely.
Yeah. People who are resilient thrive in coaching. Those are the people we want to coach because they can, with support, they can really make positive change. And we don't talk much about resilience in the coaching field, but Manu and I are trying to start that conversation. You know, what is it that helps people become more resilient? And part of our coaching model is that if someone is in mild distress, you can do resilience coaching, which is a kind of coaching that will help them be ready to meet goals.
And I think, you know, resilience is so important because part of what makes people resilient is a level of self-awareness and an ability to move forward from that.
Yes, yeah. To say, I don't like this about myself or I'm not satisfied with this, let's fix it.
Yes, exactly. Yeah. Great. Well, we're going to take a quick commercial break. And I want to come back to continuing the conversation specifically around the coaching approach that a coach needs to integrate into their business with this type of client. If they find that, you know, they are coachable, but it requires a different approach. So we'll take a quick break and we'll be right back.
Coaching Impact Radio is brought to you by Impact Coaching Academy, offering life coach training and certification in over 20 specialty categories: life, business, couples, health and wellness, and more. Courses can be completed as self-paced study, live teleclasses, or in-person intensives. Just like our radio program, Impact Coaching Academy is by coaches for coaches. Sign up now for your free membership and receive over 30 hours of training and programming worth thousands of dollars, yours to listen to and enjoy absolutely free. Then set your own path for growth with courses that are starting soon. Check the calendar to see the current offerings. Impact Coaching Academy. Be a part of the impact at impactcoachingacademy.com.
Okay, we're back. And Jeannie, I'd like to just continue the conversation talking about the coaching approach or coaching techniques that are appropriate with this type of client.
Okay. One of the things that you want to do is help people become more self-aware if they're not. So part of the coaching for a client who's not very resilient is to have them identify what triggers them and moments where they feel distressed, and then help them manage that, get the skills to manage that. You know, you ask coaching questions. You know, how would you like to be in this situation? What are your options? What could you do? What have you done in the past that worked? You know, you ask coaching questions. But it's a direct conversation, and I really like the philosophy of meeting the client where they are and finding out who they are, and not just applying your coaching skills from your niche as if it's peanut butter and it doesn't matter whether you're putting on a cookie or a piece of bread or, you know, something else.
Right.
We don't want to be peanut butter. We want to be something that fits the client. Mm-hmm. Not that I don't like peanut butter. so it's trying to help them move forward. And one of our theories is that there is a continuum of abilities to respond to coaching. That, and if you imagine four circles getting larger as they go, so it's sort of like an upside down snowman.
Right.
The first one is being in distress, and the second one is resilience. And the third one is balance, and the fourth one is performance. So the top is performance, and the bottom is distress. We imagine this as sort of a moving, fluid up and down process in people's lives. You know, there are, and balance, we mean life and wellness coaching fits in the balance section. Performance coaching is at the top, and resilience coaching is the next to the last, at the next to the bottom. And so what we imagine is that people get knocked off balance, you know, that the snowman sort of swings from right to left, and people can slide up and down inside the snowman mm-hmm. when something happens. And an example is a client I had years ago who came for retirement coaching to plan retirement, and so it was a performance coaching goal, but within a month lost their dog, they had no children, their spouse, and their mother. They all died within 30 days. Well, obviously that person was in distress and had to start building resilience again and building balance again before they could do performance coaching. Mm-hmm. Does that make sense?
That makes
and
perfect
so
sense.
And within the same client, they move up and down. So what we're trying to figure out is where are they at the moment they want coaching?
Mm-hmm.
You know, they may have times in their life where they're ready for performance and times when they're in distress.
Yeah.
You know, right during a divorce, usually people are pretty, they struggle with resilience.
Well, your formula or your analogy, you know, really makes sense. And you know, it's really universal too, isn't it?
Mm-hmm.
Because we all have, no matter what our level of resilience,
mm-hmm.
our level of distress, you know, we would fit within, you know, somewhere in that mix.
Right.
And, you know, so as a coach, you're meeting a client wherever they are, and it could be someone who really is coachable, but in that moment is dealing with some issues that are beyond the norm for them.
Yeah,
and it's,
I think
it's taking them right out of balance.
Yeah, at some point in time, we are all coachable, unless
yeah.
we are, you know, low intelligence and have, you know, traumatic brain injury. But even that is coachable at some level.
Mm-hmm.
It's, you know, if you've just been in a horrible car wreck and you're struggling to survive, that's probably not a good time for balance coaching. You know?
Yeah.
You have to meet people where they are, and coaches haven't focused on that as much in training in the past.
Mm-hmm.
It's a new conversation, which is part of our increasing professionalism, I think.
Yes.
You know, how does the field become more professional and more precise? You know, how does science add to the art of coaching?
Yeah.
And so this is
and
about
adaptable.
Let's add some science, you know.
Yeah.
Let's add science and make it better.
Mm-hmm. And part of what you're saying is we have to be more adaptable. It's
yeah.
really about the client, and as you said, meeting them where they are, and they're going to be in different places at different times of their life and life situation.
Right. You know, if you're a career coach, does it mean that you can't coach someone for balance or performance? Probably not. But you need to think about what are the skills and how would I do it differently? Does that make sense?
Yeah, it makes perfect sense. So let's talk a little bit about this, the coaching continuum
mm-hmm.
that you and Manon have created.
Mm-hmm. It's a new theory. We thought it up, and we're certainly open to modifying our model and getting input and expanding it and improving it. You know, it's a work in progress. But we've been thinking about it a couple of years and have actually trademarked the name because it's a we think it's a valuable model to teach people what we're talking about.
Mm-hmm.
It's about clients have changes and clients have challenges and coaches have changes and coaches have challenges. You know, if a coach is in a stage of distress, what are we doing coaching somebody? maybe we need to take a break and work on our, you know, get our own coach. So that we get resilience or get on medication or whatever, you know, go to therapy, whatever it takes to get ourselves back to resilience and balance. And so it's like you said, it's universal. We're all human. All humans can improve themselves. I'm an optimist and I believe that 100%. You know, how they do it and how you help them do it is the issue.
Mm-hmm.
And many, many coaches that are experienced, I've talked to about this idea, and they're saying, oh, yeah, I remember a client I had 2 years ago, and, you know, I'm not sure I should have been coaching that person.
Mm-hmm.
Or, you know, they just couldn't make any progress because they just weren't ready. You know, we use the word ready and we use the word stuck. You know, it's in our language as coaches, but we haven't had a way to think about it that moved us forward. We're just sort of like, oh, man, I don't know what to do. You know, help. And I've actually had coaches, you know, that I was supervising go, I don't have a clue what to do with this person. They're really in trouble.
Yeah.
So, you know, part of our ethics as coaches, the ICF ethics, are that we must refer people to appropriate services and that we must identify if we're the wrong coach for this person. Well, we think you might be the right coach at the wrong time. Mm. There's another level there.
Yeah, that makes perfect sense. It really does. And, you know, if you look at the title of the program that UMNO have created for Impact Coaching Academy, Client Screening for Successful Coaching Engagement, it really goes beyond trying to figure out if a client is coachable. That's what I'm reading into this, because it's more about, as you said, meeting the client where they are, understanding through the screening where they are.
Absolutely.
And that's where you're starting.
Yes.
And if you haven't done that screening process, you could be completely off the mark. You could be working in an area of performance, you know, as most coaches, you know, may want to start, or the client identifies. That's their agenda. That's where they want to start. But it could be around resilience. It could be around distress or balance. I mean, so it's really important to screen and understand where they are.
Yes. Yeah, if they start at the right place, we think everybody can be successful.
Yeah.
If the coach
yeah.
starts with them where they are, we think right. they can be successful.
So tell us a little bit, just a very brief overview of the training program.
Okay. It's four classes, 90 minutes long each. Class one, we talk about why would we screen, and what is coachability, you know, what is resilience? We talk about the difference between a client having strong emotions and real distress. Those are different.
Mm-hmm.
We introduce the screening questions. And all through the course, students have a chance to practice between sessions. In the second class, we start with case studies and talk about the continuum. We start introducing things that may keep people from being resilient, and one of those is sleep disorders. So we introduce that. You know, how many, I guess about 30% of the United States has sleep disorders,
mm-hmm.
and we don't even think about what effect that has on people's ability to reach goals.
True.
But it has a huge effect. And so, you know, we don't even think to ask about clients how they're sleeping.
Mm-hmm.
Then the class three, we do case studies to talk about anxiety and depression, and the difference between a client crisis and client distress, because a client crisis can occur to someone who's highly resilient, or a client crisis can occur to someone who's not very resilient, which throws them into distress.
And what's the difference in how you deal with that?
Right, yes.
Yeah.
You know, how do you approach coaching with those differences?
Mm-hmm.
And then we talk about how to make referrals in an ethical way. And the last class, we again do case studies. We talk about addictions, which is obviously a huge issue in our culture, most cultures, about ADD and ADHD and how that affects coaching,
mm-hmm.
About involuntary coaching and relationships with sponsors. You know, in the ICF language, the client is the person you're coaching and the sponsor is the business who's paying for it, or it could be, you know, their spouse paying for it, or it could be whatever.
Right.
And we're talking about how do we manage confidentiality with sponsors when someone is in high distress.
Mm-hmm.
That's a necessary conversation for coaches to have so that you don't step on something very difficult.
Yes.
Or get someone fired or something.
Mm-hmm.
You know, there's an ethical conversation there. So we teach how to do that. So at the end of the course, people should be pretty robustly able to have this conversation with clients.
And just as a sidebar, this program provides six ICF continuing coach education units. which is also a plus. But, you know, even if there weren't CCEs attached to this program, I mean, this really is a must-take training course. You know, I think every single coach who's practicing needs to have this training. And I'm just going to wrap it up and ask your final thoughts, your final message around this whole topic.
I think the more skilled and aware that coaches become, the better we listen. And good coaching is about listening. It's about listening for the client, listening for their needs, listening for barriers, listening for process. You know, how do you move them forward? How do they move themselves forward? So it helps you form the right questions to be a good listener.
And support them to achieve the goals that they want and be successful.
You bet.
That's why we do what we do, right?
Yes, that's right.
Yeah. Well, it's been a really fascinating conversation. And I thank you for being with us today. And I invite our listeners to check out the Client Screening for Successful Coaching Engagement training program that is on Impact Coaching Academy's website. It's under the Life Coach training calendar, and we have upcoming programs relatively frequently, so it's an easy add-on to whatever you're doing. So, Jeannie, thanks again. Appreciate you being here. And for our listeners, we'll see you next week.
And thank you for joining us today. Come back next week for more exciting coaching conversation by coaches for coaches with Frankie Dorn and Terry Hayes. Coaching Impact Radio is brought to you by Impact Coaching Academy. Experience ICA with over 30 hours of complimentary materials, then chart your own specific training plan at impactcoachingacademy.com. And, of course, join us and access the growing archive of programs at coachingimpactradio.com. Join us next week, same time and place, as we continue the coaching conversation. I'm Vince Hayes. Bye-bye, everyone.